Forward. How Science Fiction Saved Me from a Life of Crime. So I decided if there was a God, his name had to be Lester Del Rey, and if Satan was indeed a fallen angel, his real name was Dr. Shedd. I'll tell you about it. I had just come back from Tomorrow, really exhausted. These five poor bastards living in a kind of Dante's Inferno inside the belly of a computer, and a giant bird, the Hergelmir Paul Anderson called it, the one from Norse mythology, and all kinds of vomity stuff happening to them. So I was really whacked out, plonked straight out of my jug, and I flopped down for some sleep, but I couldn't. First of all, because the story kept intruding, it's in this book, and I hope it messes your mind similarly, because Joanna Russ, the writer, suggested that if she was to go back and read my stories a second time, they wouldn't bash her head as strongly as they had the first time. That she wished I would write a little more precisely so she could go back to the stories and sort of walk around them admiringly, noticing the details, as if they were statues. To which I replied that my stories were by no means statue stories, immobile, fixed, permanent. They were assaults, and if they ruined her equilibrium only once, I'd settle for that. I wanted explosions, not cool meditative think pieces. There are other guys who do those in abundance. What I do is something else. So there was the story, I Have No Mouth, and I Must Scream, with the bird and the computer and those five poor slobs, which I had just finished writing, having had to go into the future to write it, as all writers must when telling a science fiction story of times to come. And second, keeping me from Morpheusville, was the realization that abruptly, I was a writer of stature, and how Lester Del Rey had helped me get started writing, teaching me as much of what he knew about the craft, which is considerable, as my pea-sized adolescent brain could contain back in 1955. I'm sure Lester never really thought I would become a writer of stature. In fact, he still doesn't. But what the hell does he know? He ought to be damned glad I'm a W of S, because W of S's don't have to borrow subway fare from Lester Del Rey. The fact that it took me 11 years to become an overnight success should also reassure him. It's not my fault success has brought my unseemly arrogance and braggadocio to the surface. I was always thus tainted. But when you're poor and unsuccessful, it's just vulgar ostentation to flaunt such character flaws. Success wears very badly on me. I'm a sore winner. But those who have known and loved me through the dismal swamps of all the lies that are my life will testify that it's not merely the acquisition of pocket money that has made me an obnoxious snob. The seeds were always present. Only becoming a writer of stature has made them flower. I'm thinking of taking up Japanese flower arrangement. I digress. Lester is God. Dr. Shedd, who was at Ohio State University and told me I would never become a good writer, is the fallen angel. And science fiction saved me from a life of crime. Honest. Portrait of the Artist as a Maladjusted Gutter Snipe. Fresh-mouthed out of Painesville, Ohio, with the marks of cat's paw heels all over my tuchus. Some kind of weird freak-out in the days before the teeny boppers invented the phrase. All hungry big eyes and fingers twitching to get said what was banging around inside my skull. Bounced out of Ohio State for lousy grades and having been pinched for shoplifting a 45 RPM of Oscar Peterson playing Poor Butterfly. Come to absolute dead end with the world at the age of 20. Having booted around the country in myriad disguises. Having gotten most of what I knew out of books boosted from a very nice man who ran Publix Bookmart in Cleveland, who understood enough about kids and their voiceless desires to make something of themselves, that he didn't call the badges when he caught me trying to edge out of the door with a copy of P. pilgrims through time and space under my pea jacket. I've never been back to see him. I don't think I could face him, even now, 12-13 years later. But he is one of God's good guys, and perhaps he can draw some consolation from knowing that his human behavior resulted in the undersigned moving on through the years and doing all the writing that has been done. If he likes the stories, it will even amount to something for him. Ashamed apologies and a gentle thank you. I do not digress. It was science fiction that kept me straight. I mean, what do you do when you find that things are not what you were taught they're supposed to be? What do you do with the desperation that boils up from your stomach when you know there's a road out there with your destination at the end of it, but it's too damned dark to even find the road? You turn and turn and turn around like a dog trying to escape. Shrieks in the cavity of your head that so urgently needs to be filled with facts and challenges, until you get grabbed up by the back of the neck and something's got you that points you off into the murk. Run like a mother, and one day it gets lighter and you see you've managed to escape the slammer and bad scenes, and you're heading toward being a writer of stature or something equally as lovely. Then you turn around and you yell back in the direction you came. You yell, "Hey, thanks, damn it, thanks. Thanks, Ben Jason and Frank Andrasovsky and Nan Hamlin and Alice Norton, who is really Andre Norton. Thanks, Don Ford and Roy and Dee Dee Lavender and Doc Barrett. Thanks, Lee Hoffman and Lester and AJ. Thanks, Larry Shaw and Paul Fairman and Hans Sanderson. Thanks, Silver Bob. Thanks, Ted Sturgeon. Thanks, Bill Hamling and Ralph Weinstock and Dorothy Parker, who reviewed Gentleman Junkie and Esquire and never knew that she had provided the world's most insecure writer with the first tangible proof that he was one whit as good as he had been telling everyone he was. Thanks to Theron Raines and Bob Mills, who agented something that was 10 times more trouble than it was money-making. The thanks rise like thick wood smoke. They never end. No one gets through the dark and into the light by himself. So it becomes incumbent upon me to pass along the help, to do what I can for other writers trying to get a foot up. That's the honor among writers, because no writer is ever really in competition with any other, not even here in Hollywood, where their guerrilla warfare is generally pretty depressing. But the largest thanks go to two who can't say thanks back. One is New York City, that took me in and said, "Get straight, kid." The other is science fiction. Science fiction is people, of course, not just a genre. It is Walter Fultz when he was editor at Lion Books because he took a chance and bought my first book. It is Fred Paul who grits his teeth and says he has more trouble with one little 6,500-word short by me than a 250,000-word trilogy by Jack Vance. It is even Judy Merrill, who, save once, ignores me in her annual Best of the Year collections, because if she didn't infuriate me, I wouldn't push as hard as I do to bug her with a story so good she couldn't overlook it next year. It is all the people who took me in, so to speak, and could never have known anything worthwhile would come from their kindness. It is for all these people, for the field of science fiction, for the city of New York, and for the few who have died without seeing me make something worthwhile of the guttersnipe that I write. For all of them, and for myself. When I was much younger, I made the error of saying I wrote from the gut. The obvious funnies that image provokes have haunted me almost as obstinately as "mad dogs have kneed us in the groin," a cataleptic non sequitur I managed to get off almost 10 years ago. But it is still true. If not anatomically, then poetically. The assault concept of writing as opposed to the statue concept. Thank you, Bob Bloch and Donald Wolheim. Thank you, Knox Berger and Tom Scorsia. Thank you, Joe Hensley and Ed Wood. I forgot them earlier. Back to the point. Writing consumes me. It is truly what Mailer calls it, the bitch goddess. Or maybe Irwin Shaw pinned it more precisely when he said, quote, "The explanations a writer gives himself for having written any particular book are often not the real reasons why that book has been written. Honesty is not the issue. Understanding is. A man does not write one novel at a time or even one quatrain at a time. He is engaged in the long process of putting his whole life on paper. He is on a journey, and he is reporting in, this is where I think I am, and this is what this place looks like today." Unquote. The stories in this book comprise various reports of what the terrain looked like at various times. Check the original dates of publication on the acknowledgments page when you read them. And if the landscape seems less misty in some than others, it's probably because my eyesight got better as I grew older. Thanks, Leo and Diane Dillon. As for all the tomorrows, I intend to keep writing stories that piss people off, that tell the particular kind of truth I think is valid, that will make me feel more and more like a writer of stature, which I honestly think I am. Really, I mean it. I don't doubt it for a second, damn it, so stop giggling. Stories that will make Dr. Shedd sniff the air and make Lester smile as he thinks, the kid's coming along all right. Stories that will make me enough money so I won't have to go back to shoplifting. I mean, it is really unseemly for a writer of stature to be banging the bars with his tin cup, screaming, "Ask Dorothy Parker, she'll vouch for me." Ellison, done reporting in. 10-4. Harlan Ellison, Ellison Wonderland, Hollywood, September 1966.